The all-new Hyundai 2024 Santa Fe is equipped with everything you need to break free from the dull work week and embark on an adventurous weekend with your family. The all-new Hyundai Santa Fe's features like available H-Track all-wheel drive, standard third-row seating, available dual wireless charging pads ensure you can take on any adventure. Available H-Track all-wheel drives so you can take on the dirt trails and kick up some mud. Standard third-row seating so your whole family can experience the thrill together. Available dual wireless charging pads so no one gets stuck in the great outdoors with a dead phone. Whether you're tailgating out in the dirt lot, Carter Finley, shout out Carter Finley, or whether you're whitewater rafting, taking the entire family on an adventurous trip, maybe you're out camping at Mount Rogers. I used to go as a kid, wish my parents had a Hyundai Santa Fe. The Hyundai Santa Fe is perfect for your family outing. Learn more about the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe at HyundaiUSA.com. Call 562-314-4603 for complete details. What's up, everybody? Welcome to the Pick Six Podcast, CBS Sports Daily NFL Podcast. I'm Will Brinson. I'm your host. It is Friday, May 15th. We're halfway home through the month of May. Although at this point, calendars no longer exist. Time is not a thing. Days of the week no longer perpetuate the universe. You can tell it's a Friday because I'm feeling philosophical. We're going to break down the NFC and AFC West win totals and futures with Sean Wagner McGuff. Make sure to check out tons of Gambling Week content. Although every week on the Pick Six Podcast is Gambling Week, really, but this is an actual themed Gambling Week. Debo did a great job. Producer Debo did a great job plotting it out. We got all the other divisions in the feed now. We also have a discussion with Jonathan Jones, talking about what the world could look like, what the NFL world could look like if there are no fans in stands. Even if there are no fans, we still expect games to be played. If games are being played, that means you're playing fantasy football. And if you're playing fantasy football, you better be subscribing to the Fantasy Football Today podcast. Of course, this week you won't be getting draft advice. You'll be taking a little trip in the way back machine. You might remember when you won your league with LT, not Lawrence Taylor, LDT in 2006, or maybe Randy Moss in 2007. Were you the one who bought into Peyton Hillis after his big season? Whoops. All this week, the Fantasy Football Today podcast has turned into Fantasy Football Yesterday. They're looking back at the best and worst seasons of the last 20 plus years of fantasy football, the Mount Rushmores at each position, the biggest breakouts and busts, and all the best memories from fantasy football since the late 90s. Relive it this week for 5 episodes of Fantasy Football Yesterday that you don't really need to listen to the day of the release. Like, you know, you can just, it's evergreen, baby. Pop it in your podcast and check it out on the Fantasy Football Today podcast. We're available wherever you find the Pick Six pod. Sean Wagner McGuff. You know, so we're probably supposed to dive right into the win total, Sean, but you're a fantasy guy. We talk fantasy all the time. We go to each other for advice on Sunday mornings. Usually you steer me in the wrong direction. I lose my games. I get mad at you. But I'm curious, what do you have a memorable bust or breakout or like a great draft pick that you've made? I'm not sure when you started playing.
I actually started playing really late. I was like the football fan for most of my life who didn't play fantasy. Hmm. I think my first season was like 2010. I remember it was with me and my high school friends and they didn't know what they were doing. And I actually did a lot of research and I got like Adrian Peterson with the 6th overall pick because like they took a bunch of quarterbacks like Aaron Rodgers and then all that, didn't realize the positional value. The biggest, best pick I ever made was picking up David Johnson on waivers his rookie season because he came on at the end of that season and won me a title. And then I was going to say the one outlier breakout I remember vividly that didn't impact me was in 2015, Gary Barnidge went for over 1,000 yards and 9 touchdowns. And I was in the keeper league at that point. And someone used one of their 4 keepers on Gary Barnidge thinking they had he was 30 years old at the time, but they thought they just had an advantage at the tight end position. And he played one more year in the NFL and hasn't played ever since. And he had 612 yards and 2 touchdowns.
That is absolutely superb. I will say that and I think that this harkens sort of to the change in what's happened with fantasy football. Like I haven't won a title in my main league in fantasy football in like, it might be like 8 years now. It's embarrassing. I routinely get ridiculed for it, because, you know, I write about football professionally. One of my best friends, Nathan, won like four out of the last 5 years. But I had a really great streak there in, I think I won three straight titles in like 07 or maybe like 08 to 2010. And, notably, I remember that, and the same sort of thing that you're talking about, like, back in the day, you could find great value, with running. Like people just didn't know what they were doing, you know, like they just didn't know. And, so in 2009, I won a title when I picked up a, fairly, you know, underutilized, only had one, only had two games with more than 18 carries in his entire, or more than 15 carries in his entire career at that point. Young running back named Jamal Charles. I picked him up off waivers down the stretch in 2009, and he went off in the final four games of the 2009 season. He compiled 658 yards. That's an average of 164.5 yards per game, four touchdowns, lit it up, was great in the passing game. And then in 2010, I grabbed him in the third round because that's just how it worked. People didn't get hyped. Running backs didn't get hyped up and pushed up the board. And I grabbed, Jamal Charles in round, three, and then LeSean McCoy, a second year running back in, in Andy Reid's system in Philadelphia in the fifth round. And I obliterated people because like Jamal Charles went for, I think in 2010, what did he do? He had, 14, almost 1500 rushing yards, five touchdowns, 500 receiving yards, three touchdowns. And LeSean McCoy, went off for, you know, he didn't have his greatest year ever, but you know, over 1,000 rushing yards and seven touchdowns. So that was a fun year, and I wish that it was still like that. I also won a title with LaDainian Tomlinson in 2006. There was a time when, like, and you can go listen to the Fantasy Football Day podcast if you want to do this, but like, if you got the number one pick, you were just winning your league. Cause you would take, and this is before you were getting into it, but it was like, you would take LT or Sean Alexander, whichever one it was, and you just won your league. Like LT was unstoppable.
Yeah. I'm glad you gave Sean Alexander a shout out because I was watching him because I grew up in Seattle, obviously. I don't know if analytics have taken a look at Sean Alexander's production. He was the least impressive productive running back, one of the least productive impressive running backs I've seen, because he would hit the line of scrimmage so slowly. But that offensive line, when they had Walter Jones, Steve Hutchinson on that left side, they would just run these like delayed stretches off the left side. He would be so patient, kind of like Le'Veon Bell, I guess. I just remember as a young kid, though, not liking him that much because it seemed like he would get stuffed for a loss and he would not hit the hole hard, and it would bug me so much.
Yeah. Now I kind of want to go back and like just look and see how I did. Like, I mean, it's just so frustrating. It's so much harder to win a fantasy football title in 2020 than it was 10 or 15 years ago, I think, because you just had haves and have nots, back then. And now it's like everybody's competitive because there's so many players that you can utilize.
Not to mention there's just so much more like the fantasy writing, even in the last like 8 years since I started playing, has improved so much that everyone is well informed because everyone on whatever website can find a column with good information out there because the writing has just gotten so much better over the years.
By the way, in that 2010 season, I actually went 10-3-3. Three ties. This is before we used decimal points.
I mean, I was playing at an earlier stage where we didn't use decimal points and there would be ties. And by the way, it kind of flies under the radar. 2005, Sean Alexander had 27 touchdowns and almost 1900 yards. If you had him on your fantasy team, you were winning the title.
That is absolutely correct. And for those that don't care, which is everybody, in 2008?
I can't. You would probably know.
I can't. They all bleed together. I got a ton of fantasy titles, mostly in baseball. That's my best sport, oddly enough. I'm trying to think of the last time I won this stupid league. It's been so freaking long. I'm winning it this year, Sean. I'm winning it this year. Anyway, and people care less about fantasy as you sort of shift to gambling, too. So let's talk gambling. The NFC West, over under the San Francisco 49ers. Jimmy Garoppolo, Kyle Shanahan, over under 10.5 wins. The over is -125. The under +105. San Francisco is the favorite to win the division at +105. So just over even money. They're the favorite to win the NFC at +325 and only 7-1 to win the Super Bowl. Your thoughts on this over under for San Francisco?
Yeah, I don't like taking the big numbers, even though I always do with like the Ravens and the Chiefs. And I think if you look at the teams with the Super Bowl hangover, it's worrying, but I actually like the over, and strictly because of their three biggest losses, they have found a way, I think, to competently replace them. And they traded DeForest Buckner, obviously. I think Javon Kinlaw is going to be a good fit there. And what's different about Kinlaw coming in there is he's not going to be expected, I think, to like be the DeForest Buckner necessarily, but they have so many other bodies around Buckner last year that he doesn't have to come in and be the star. He just has to be another guy. And it's a pretty similar line of reasoning for Brandon Ayuk replacing Emmanuel Sanders. I think there's maybe an argument to be made that maybe Ayuk is a better fit for Kyle Shanahan's offense than even Emmanuel Sanders was, who's a little bit slower, you know, in this stage of his career. And then they lost Joe Staley to a retirement, but getting Trent Williams, I think that was probably my second favorite trade in the entire offseason, maybe just behind the DeAndre Hopkins move. And I don't think he's going to need that much time to adjust the Kyle Shanahan system. I think he'll be fine there. So I don't think they're going to win 13 games again. I think there's just going to be some natural regression. We always talk about how defenses, it's harder to hold up on a year-to-year basis. But when you look at Kyle Shanahan, and maybe the fact that Jimmy Garoppolo, that was his first full season as a starting quarterback. And he's been around for so long. We've been talking about him as a legitimate, or as a possible franchise quarterback for so long, that you lose sight of the fact that this guy just hasn't played very much. And so I think there's actually reason to think he could still be ascending, especially when you look at how he played in the second half of the year. I thought he really took off in that difficult stretch of games in New Orleans against Seattle. He played very well.
Yeah, he did. And I think that when you look at the schedule too, I mean, I agree that to me, Super Bowl hangovers are a concern. I think if you actually dive into it, it's not as bad as you might think it would be, just because of, you know, you lose a Super Bowl in heartbreaking fashion. But like, certainly we saw the Rams kind of we've seen the Rams do it. The Falcons do it. I mean, the Panthers do it. Like, sometimes teams are lethargic getting out of the gate after they lose a tough Super Bowl. And that matters if you're taking an over of 10.5, especially to me for the 49ers, because if they are going to hit the over, they are going to have to win, I almost think, at minimum four of their first five games. They open up with Arizona at home. Then they're at the Jets, at the Giants, presumably with those games 7 days apart and in the exact same stadium. They will be staying in the greater New York metropolitan tri-state area. Then they get the Eagles at home on Sunday night in week 4, the Dolphins at home in week 5, and the Rams at home on Sunday night in week 6. That I think that is a viable 6-0 start if they come out of the gates crisp and ready to play, and Brandon Ayuk and Trent Williams are on the same page as it relates, and Jimmy Garoppolo is healthy. Like, I think they could easily jump out to a 6-0 start, and if they do that, they're getting to 11 wins.
Yeah, but I hear you on the Super Bowl hangover, but maybe the one thing more important than the Super Bowl hangover this year, we talk about all the time, is teams with continuity, and they still do have a lot of continuity, even though we just mentioned those.
No, I agree. I'm saying, I think if you look at the actual math on the Super Bowl hangover, it's just not as bad as we think. We just tend to anecdotally remember when these teams lose and they struggle out of the gate. They're at New England, at Seattle. That's a tough pair of road trips, but Green Bay at home better be a win. I mean, they own Green Bay, at New Orleans. So that's a toss up. It could be a great game again. At Rams, I mean, you know, wouldn't be surprised if it swung either way. Bills and Redskins at home, I think, would be two wins. At Dallas, fine if it's a loss. At Arizona, fine if it's a loss. But then Seattle at home in week 17, I think that's probably a win. So to me, you've really already, like, I think their floor might be like 9 wins if everything is operating correctly and everybody's healthy. This is just a good football team, and they've done a good job with this organization. Wouldn't be surprised if the defense takes a small step back.
Yeah, and let's not forget how dominant they were a season ago. It wasn't like, you know, we talked about the Seahawks or the Packers, how they lucked their way into so many wins. I mean, they beat the Vikings by 17 points in the playoffs. They beat the Packers by 17 points. I think we can all agree that was not a 17-point game. That was like a 24-point bloodbath, and then the Packers got some points there late in the game when the 49ers already knew they were going to the Super Bowl. In my estimation, this was I mean, you have to say they're the best team in the NFC, but I think the only team that comes close to them in overall talent level are the New Orleans Saints. Because if you look at all the games, they took care of business. They weren't a luck box team. They were blowing out teams and winning with authority. And that's why I have confidence going into this upcoming season that they can take a step back and still be the best or second best team in the NFC.
The one thing I would point out with this team is that they have struggled. Last year, they struggled a little bit in terms of they didn't blow out teams with mobile quarterbacks.
Yeah.
It seemed to be sort of a bugaboo. They, of course, have Russell Wilson twice. They have Kyler Murray twice. You would think by week five, they would probably be playing Tua Tagovailoa, who's a very mobile quarterback. Daniel Jones is a very good young runner, in week three. That could be a problem. They also have, Josh Allen in week 13. Dwayne Haskins is actually surprised terribly immobile. And, despite what Stephen A. Smith thought coming into the draft. And I, does Dak qualify as mobile? I think Dak qualifies as mobile.
Oh, definitely. Yeah.
Okay. So, I mean, like they're, this is a roster that, or a schedule that's littered with mobile quarterbacks. So that's at least maybe and something that would concern you.
And again, they're operating within, I think we'd all say is the worst, the hardest division in all of football. So every, they can lose, they could win every divisional game, but you could look at all those and say they could lose every divisional game. So it'll be somewhere in the middle, but they're not going 6-0 against those caliber of teams.
That's right. All right, moving along. So we, I mean, did you make a pick?
Yeah, I'm going over. Yeah. I think they're not going to win 13 games again. They'll get a little bit worse, but
that's a small window you paid yourself into 11 and 13.
It's a very Tabeek-esque prediction. I know. 11 and 5 is my prediction.
Should we explain the Tabeek thing? Because we keep referencing on the podcast. For those that don't know, our former editor, Matthew Tabeek, who's now at AtlantaFalcons.com and a recovering corona patient, he boldly in 2000 and...
Before the 16 season?
2016, that's right. Boldly predicted that the... I mean, like he was like, we were talking about over-unders at our company dinner. He's like, the Raiders are winning 12 games. We're like, so you want the over? He's like, no, just 12. We're like, wait, you're going to take, you don't want like over 8. He's like, just 12. We're like, okay, that's sort of insane. And there was a sizable wager of sorts on it that I can't really get into the details of.
And we were giving him 12 and over and he just was flat out rejecting it.
He didn't want 13, 14, 15 or 16, just 12. It was like the 6 minute ad thing from Something About Mary. He's like, not 6, not 8, 7.
And then to make it even better, the Raiders hit 12 wins before week 17, but Derek Carr gets hurt. So then they lose in week 17 because they're starting Connor Cook and Matt McGloin. And
yeah. It's unbelievable.
Because we thought they were going to go over 12 wins and give them endless crap for not taking 13.
And somehow hit it right on the number. Unbelievable. Yeah, I'm with you on the over there. I actually don't mind at all the idea of betting on the 49ers at plus 105 to win the division. I think that's a pretty, like, I know it's the toughest division in football. I know we think they can take a step back. I love the Cardinals this year. Kenny White was on our HQ show and he thinks the Rams at 3-1 are a good value. And I don't want to bet against Russell Wilson, but like, shouldn't the 49ers be like minus 150 given how good they looked last year?
Yeah. And not to mention, yes, they can take a step back, but we're about to talk about the Seahawks and they are, if you're looking at teams in terms of regression, the poster boy for that. And I understand that I like the Cardinals too, and I like their over, but that's a big gap to go from 5 wins to go from 11 wins in winning division. And I know you're higher on them probably than I am, and I'm even high on them, but I don't think they can make that gap in a single offseason. So
I was going to say, there's also something about like taking an even money division bet that like isn't very sexy. And I think it drives people away. It's like, plus 105. Like, you're just even money. It's like, there's no juice to that. The 49ers just have to win probably 12 games and you got it. I wouldn't even mind taking them to win the division instead of taking the over at 10.5 games. Because I think you can win the division with 10 games or even 9 games, depending on how the schedule plays out. So maybe that's something to consider. All right. Moving along to the Seattle Seahawks, as you mentioned, the Seattle Seahawks over under 9.5 wins, the over plus 130, the under minus 150, which is very notable because Vegas is not stupid and knows how to juice these puppies up.
Yeah. And talking about the Seahawks is tough for me. It's the same way I talk about the Houston Texans. And you look at the overall body of their roster, you don't really like it that much. I think the Seahawks defense is a problem, specifically the pass rush. We'll see if, I mean, the Clowney thing is continuing to stretch on, but let's see if they bring in Clowney. That would obviously help. It comes down to the quarterback, and I don't want a bet against Russell Wilson not getting to 10 wins. It's only happened once in his 8-year career. They went 9-7 in that year. I think Preach pointed out that they had one game in that season where their kicker missed 3 field goals or something like that. So Russell Wilson is continually getting them to 10 wins. And Russell Wilson has covered up so many of these flaws over recent years. I know early on in his career, he had a great defense to lean on, but when he was playing offensively in those years, they didn't have an offensive line and he was covering up those warts. And in recent seasons, the defense hasn't been as good. And he's just been able to engineer these close wins over and over again that really gives me pause. Cause normally I say, oh, this team had a point differential right around 0, which is what the Seahawks did have. They're going to regress, but I think Russell Wilson is almost regression proof. And so I would take the over, especially if you're getting those odds as opposed to the under at, what did you say, -150 or yeah. -110, -150, sorry. So I would rather have the Seahawks over. I don't feel great about it because I don't think they're a great team from top to bottom. And that's why it can make arguing for the over seem simplistic, just saying the quarterback's name over and over again. But it is Russell Wilson, and that's why I'm taking the over.
Yeah, I'm going to take the under, and I'm with you. There has hardly been a bigger Russell Wilson supporter since he came into the league in 2012 than yours truly. But I think when you look at the Seahawks, this is a 11 win team last year that profiled as an 8.2 win team. There was no one, and here's the thing. Like, I think that if they came out and decided to, as Seahawks Twitter likes to say, let Russ cook, and just unleash this like up-tempo short passing game offense that ran play action and let Russell take shots down the field, then this is a 10 or 11 win team. But the problem for me is if you are the Seahawks and you continually roll out this Brian Schottenheimer offense that attempts to lean on the run. And by the way, they're talking about bringing Marshawn Lynch back. That should tell you how Rashad Penny and Chris Carson are faring. If you know, when you continue to lean on that, you decrease your margin for error because you are keeping games close. You're keeping games tight. And that means you might win late with a clutch quarterback, but it's less likely for you to win a ton of games because you end up battling it out late and you're asking Russell to pull something off. And it's so, so tough. DJ Dallas, a nice fourth round ad in the 2020 draft. I think that this is, I don't know, is it the best pass catching group that Russell Wilson's ever had? Is that?
I mean, he had Baldwin and Lockett at one point.
Yeah. I mean, Metcalf, Lockett, Dorsett, I think what you see though, and again, this goes back to what the Seahawks are offensively. DK Metcalf, Tyler Lockett, Philip Dorsett, right? Those are their three top receivers and Greg Olsen is at the tight end. All four of those guys thrive off getting vertical. Will Olsen maybe more a little bit, not, you know, straight downfield off of play action. Like that's what those guys do really well. It is very clear that they want to run the ball and then let Russ take deep play action shots. They win 9 games or more. They've done it every year that Russ has been there. But I think there's a pretty good chance that 9-7 is their ceiling here. So I would take the under, although I wouldn't take it at -150. I think that's a bit pricey because Lord knows Russell could pull some stuff out of his butt and win some games. And by the way, potentially no fans in the stands. That would be a problem for Seattle.
I mean, and everything you say, I can't disagree with because I agree with all of, that's why it's tough to argue.
I mean, everything you say,
it's literally just Russ. But you know, when you go down their game log, it's like they did not do well after the week 11 bye last year. They went 3-3 down the stretch and limped into the playoffs. And there are 2 games before the bye, they won in overtime. So, yep. I mean, they had so many points last season.
They should have lost to the Bengals in week 1 somehow. Andy Dalton had them on the goal line down 1 point. They should have lost to the Steelers, but
against Mason Rudolph.
Big Ben got hurt and then they got that pass interference overturned replay that Pete Carroll somehow got, even though they hadn't done one all freaking year long. They should have lost to the Rams, but Zuerlein, you know, shanked that kick. They should have lost to the Browns, but Freddie.
I don't remember that game.
I don't either, but Freddie Kitchens is a human being who's terrible at his job, so they didn't do that. You know, they got manhandled by the Ravens. I don't remember them playing at the Falcons.
I mean, the 49ers should have won that game. Do you remember that Garoppolo bombed
it? Won that game, yeah.
So there were so many points along that year where it could have gone south, and you could see them going 8-8 or 7-9 even, and every single bounce went their way.
They were down 14-7. Remember that crazy Anthony Harris pick six of Russ?
Yes.
They're down 14-7 to the Vikings, and then down 17-10 going into halftime, and then they just ripped off like 17 crazy points immediately. They could have lost the Vikings on that Monday. Yeah, I mean, I just don't think you can survive like that as a football team.
And it's worth repeating because they haven't really sent anyone to bolster their edge. They're leading sacker last year at 4 sacks. Only the Dolphins had fewer sacks. The pass rush is a major issue, and that's why it's a little bit surprising that still they have all the medical info in Clowney as opposed to every other team. It's a little bit surprising that they're not the team that have negotiated with Clowney a deal. Or maybe it's probably bad news for Clowney that the team that does know about him isn't willing to give him.
I think they have a ceiling on what they want to pay him, but I think they've realized he's probably not coming back at this point. If, you know, assuming he can take visits at some point in the near future. The Los Angeles Rams, and by the way, the Seahawks, I should point out, 8.5-1 to win the NFC. That's not terrible. And 17-1 to win the Super Bowl. The Rams over under 8.5. Sean, what do you think about the Rams?
I like the under, and I think this division is going to be really good, and I think there's going to be three teams above 8 wins like a year ago and one team below, and that's going to be the Rams, and I think the Cardinals are going to take the Rams spot. And I just don't think they've done enough. They had a good season last year. Like 9-7 for a disappointing season is a good season by those standards, but they just didn't have any cap space to make additions. They didn't have any draft picks to add to the roster. They got rid of Wade Phillips, even though the defense was the strength of that team a year ago, top 10 defense by DVOA. And it was the offense that was the problem. They went from second to 17th, and they're bringing back largely the same personnel. They got rid of Todd Gurley, which is fine. I don't think that's going to impact the offense much at all. They got rid of Brandon Cooks, who wasn't healthy for a lot of the season, but when healthy, they're going to miss Brandon Cooks because he was a good vertical threat. And it comes down to Jared Goff. And look, he went to Cal. I'm supposed to root for him, as John Breach always notes on the HQ show. But in his past 21 regular season starts, and that seems like an arbitrary number, but there was a defining cutoff point in the 2018 season when that Rams offense went downhill. It was at the beginning of December, right after that shootout against the Chiefs in late November that we all remember as one of the best games. After that game, the Rams offense fell off, and they didn't recover in the playoffs. They didn't recover last year. So in Jared Goff's last 21 starts, in regular season only, 7.2 yards per attempt, 28 touchdowns, 22 interceptions, and an 83.9 passer rating. And again, that's not factoring in the playoff run where he wasn't very good in those final two games. I just don't think they added enough to get over the hump. And I think instead of a bounce back year, I think you're going to see the regression continue even more.
Yeah, I tend to agree. And so like maybe, I mean, I thought it was really interesting. Kenny White thought that the Rams are good value on our HQ show to win the division. I was very surprised by that. To me, I Wilson has been big on them. They added Cam Akers and Van Jefferson, and that's cool, but you just had to cut a running back who made too much money. And then you drafted a running back with your first pick in the second round. And then in the second round, you follow up with your second pick, which you got in the Brandon Cooks deal. And you basically add like a guy who profiles like Cooper Kupp, which is fine. Two Cooper Kupps is better than one Cooper Kupp in Van Jefferson. One of the things I think back to, I'm drawing a blank on his name and I'll tell you, hold on a second. Jared Veltier, when he came back for one final season with the Cardinals, and I think he eventually would go on to play for the Raiders, but like there was some buzz that he had been sort of talked into coming back and wanted to walk away, but ended up coming back because he knew the team needed him. I sort of wonder if that might be the case with Andrew Whitworth. And I'm not saying he's not passionate about coming back. Like he's awesome and could be a Hall of Famer. But if this offensive line doesn't drastically improve, I don't see how this Sean McVay offense gets going. I mean, Jared Goff needs protection and he needs to be able to operate with play action to get the ball to these guys who are running free. And if you can't run the ball in this McVay system, I just don't think that it's going to be like a dominant offense.
And let's Also, I think it's funny because I didn't like the move to get rid of Wade Phillips at the time. And yes. I wonder now, looking back on it, if the Rams had known this is going to be this type of offseason where you're not getting players in the building until probably right before the season, if they just would have kept Wade Phillips for continuity's sake. And they've lost a lot of players.
Let me ask you this, because I just Wikipedia'd him. What can you tell me about their new defensive coordinator, Brandon Staley?
Ooh, he was with the Bears at some point, I believe.
He was the outside linebacker.
I don't know what he's been doing since Chicago.
All right, so here's his coaching track since 2014. James Madison, the college, defensive coordinator / linebackers coach. John Carroll, the college, defensive coordinator / secondary coach. Chicago Bears, 2017 to 2018, outside linebackers coach. Denver Broncos, 2019, outside linebackers coach. LA Rams this coming year, defensive coordinator. I am not questioning Brandon Staley's pedigree, and he's clearly, Sean McVay identified him as somebody he likes, and he worked with Vic Fangio, and Vic Fangio liked him and brought him to a second location when he took the head coaching job. But Vic Fangio brought him over and didn't give him a promotion, which is a little surprising. And he's 37 years old and is going to be calling the Rams defense. Maybe he's awesome. That's a big job to take over for Wade Phillips and to operate that defense.
It almost feels like, and I have no idea if this is true or not, there had to be something there with Wade Phillips that we don't really know about, because I don't understand why they made this move when it wasn't the defense that took a step back. Right. It was the offense. In a way, it felt like scapegoating. Like, we had this 100% season. 100%. We were supposed to go to the playoffs. We got to make some kind of change. And it's not just the coordinator they lost. They lost Corey Littleton, who led the team in tackles. He went to the Raiders. They lost Eric Weddle to retirement. And Dante Fowler, who I think we all agree is like a flawed player, by no means a superstar, but he had 11 and a half sacks and they got rid of him and they replaced him with Leonard Floyd, who I think is a good player. He's not a pass rusher though. He's good against the run, can drop back. He's versatile. He's not getting 11 sacks. His career high is probably somewhere around 7, I would guess.
Yeah. I mean, look, Aaron Donald's a superstar and Jalen Ramsey's awesome. And Jalen Ramsey's probably playing for a contract this year, right? I mean, we don't think he's going to sign a new deal. Taylor Rapp really impressed as a rookie last year. John Johnson is a nice player at safety. They have pieces on the defense, but if that defense regresses at all and the offensive line doesn't improve, I'm with you. I think the under is a play here. I'm selling the Rams. And maybe I'm wrong and McVay's a genius, but I'm selling the Rams. The Arizona Cardinals over under 7. This has moved up from 6.5 to 7. The over is -130. Anyone who listens to this show on a semi-regular basis knows where I'm going here. I love the over. It's one of my two best bets on the year. I like the Cardinals at 12-1 to win the division. I think those are crazy odds. I like him at 60-1 to win the Super Bowl. I like Kyler at 25-1 to win the MVP. Do you think any of those things are crazy? And do you agree with me on the over?
I don't think it's crazy. I think I'm very high on the Cardinals, and I'm taking the over. I think you're higher on them. Like, I understand the value bet of Kyler Murray winning MVP. I just don't, it's just a little bit too much of a leap in one year for me. But if I had to rank every team's offseason, including free agency in the draft, I would probably rank the Cardinals first, even above like a team like the Ravens, who I thought did a phenomenal job. It wasn't just the DeAndre Hopkins trade, which we've talked about to death, but I thought Isaiah Simmons falling to them in the draft was a steal, because this was a defense that had multiple spots to fill and probably wasn't going to get it done in one offseason. I'm not saying they're going to be a top 5, top 10 defense, but Isaiah Simmons, if they use him correctly, and that's a big, you know, what if they use him correctly.
Well, on that, I mean, I think it's worth noting, like, people push back on the Simmons pick because Hassan Reddick didn't work out for them. And by the way, instead of trading up to snag Patrick Mahomes, who the Cardinals really liked in that draft, they thought Mahomes was going to fall to him. And they were like, if he doesn't fall, like, and this is how people thought before the draft about Mahomes though. Like, they're like, okay, look, you know, we like Watson. We like Mahomes. I think they liked Watson. They did like Mahomes though. They're like, if Mahomes falls to us, we're going to take him. And if not, you know, we think Reddick's a really good player. We'll just grab him. And but like they had Honey Badger, who worked out really well. They had Deion Buchanan, who worked very well until he got hurt. To me, Reddick is really more the outlier than I don't think you can paint Simmons and Reddick in the same light.
And I don't think you draft Isaiah Simmons if you're just going to play. Like, there's been some comments made by the coaching staff that have people worried that he's just going to play at linebacker. I don't think you draft Isaiah Simmons if you're planning to use the linebacker. I think that's just
you need to fire Vance Joseph if you're not if you're going to do that. Like,
right? I just don't think you take a guy who his biggest weapon or his biggest asset is his versatility and that he can plug so many different holes. But it's not just Simmons; it's getting Campbell from the Falcons at linebacker, who I think maybe not a great player, but will be better than what they had there. Go along with Jordan Hicks. And then Jordan Phillips has been very good in Buffalo and has been a key part of what they've done there. But because he plays on the interior of the defensive line, no one really talks about him. I think he's going to be great in terms of stuffing the run. And look, they play against the Seahawks twice a year, and you know the Seahawks love to run the ball. I think that's going to be a big addition. I like the over. I don't think they're going to win the division, but when you name those odds, I can see why they're an attractive bet, similar to how, you know, we always like these long shots, and Ryan always makes fun of us for saying you guys, you know, took Trubisky 50-1 and all that. We're not saying these guys are the favorites. We're saying that it's good value for relative to other people at that position.
I mean, like people were like, Mahomes at 75-1. That's ridiculous. Like Lamar Jackson, 60-1. That's not going to happen. Well, it did. I think that this season hinges for the Cardinals, hinges on two things. I firmly believe, and I cannot be talked off of, that Kyler Murray will have another step forward in year two of Cliff Kingsbury's system. And look, all credit to Steve Keim and Cliff Kingsbury, because we were like, dog, we gotta take Bosa and just roll with Rosen. He can run it just as well as Kyler. Kyler runs it. Kyler runs that system really well. I think it comes down to two things here. One, can Marcus Gilbert and DJ Humphrey stay healthy and be effective at the tackle positions? They have Josh Jones, who they drafted in the third round as an insurance, but he's sort of more of an upside guy that you don't really want to have to plug in right away. And then two, can the 2019 defensive draft picks take a step forward? And by that, I mean Byron Murphy and Zach Allen. Allen, the third round pass rusher that they took last year, and Murphy, the second round cornerback. Those guys can be impact players. And if they take a step forward, I think you really have a defense that can be, like, if Vance Joseph does his job right, that could be a really interesting defense. Okay, so to recap.
By the way, real quick, my Kyler prediction isn't the MVP, what you're saying. And I know you're not predicting a win MVP. You're saying it's good odds. I think by the end of this next season, he will be the second best quarterback in the division. I think that's how we will rank them heading into 2021.
I think he's the second best right now.
I think it's tough to do that to Garoppolo, but that's what I'm saying is
I think by the end of the season, you'd still take Kyler in a heartbeat.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
I think there's a very good chance that Kyler finishes the number one fantasy quarterback this year.
Yeah. And if you, I don't know what his ADP will be, but if you can compare that to like Mahomes and Lamar, it's going to be tremendous value.
Yeah. I mean, he's still going in like the sixth round or something.
Really, yeah. It might be too high.
Yeah, exactly. Do you like anything in terms of NFC Super Bowl or division winner? As I pointed out, I mean, like, this is a dangerous fade of Russell Wilson and Sean McVay, but I don't mind taking the 49ers and the Seahawks both to win the division. Obviously, you know, you do like, you know, half a unit on the Cardinals and then, you know, 1.5 on the 49ers or something like that.
Yeah. I mean, I guess I don't like the Seahawks as a team, but 17-1 Russell Wilson to drag a team to the Super Bowl. I don't hate that. That would probably be my value. I still think 60-1 is great odds for the Cardinals. It's just so much has to go right. Like all their picks have to go right. All their picks, as you mentioned from last year, have to develop. It just feels like this isn't a 1 year thing. This is like their competitive improvement year. And then next year we'll be talking about them as the Super Bowl kind of team.
So, I mean, I don't like, I'm not suggesting a hedge here, but, if you put $100 on the 49ers at +105, you could put like $16 on the Cardinals at 12-1. And if one of those two teams wins the division, you would profit $89. So like that's a very nice profit off your investment. What I would suggest is if you like what I'm talking about with the Cardinals and the 49ers, put a full unit on the 49ers and then come back and put a half unit on the Cardinals. If the Cardinals win, it's a big payday, but the 49ers winning would mitigate, you know, you'd still get a half a unit victory. Okay. Let's take a break. And when we come back, we will talk about the AFC West.
The perfect combination of versatile athleisure and training apparel has arrived. Thanks to the visionary minds of New Balance, Clutch Athletics, and Rich Paul, the designs reflect the heart of the athlete and the spirit of the community. With rising defensive stars Will Anderson and Chase Young on the roster, Clutch Athletics brings the best innovative gear to all athletes, giving them style and performance on and off the field. Learn more and purchase Clutch Athletics at newbalance.com.
Now streaming on Paramount Plus.
You ready, Bob?
Well, all right.
Audiences are raving. Bob Marley is electrifying. It's the feel-good movie of the year.
You dig?
Bob Marley, One Love. Rated PG-13. Now streaming on Paramount Plus.
I laughed going into the break because Devo said, "You fools won't be talking fantasy for half an hour." Leading into the. Remember in 2010 when Jamal Charles was good?
Devo, it's better than us doing Game of Thrones recaps, which we were doing at this time last year.
Were we doing that? Was that last year?
I know. I was thinking about how, like, that got us through so much of the offseason and how much better it would have been if Game of Thrones had come out this year without sports.
Devo is like, there's no way they can screw this. do you think there's a chance, like, would we view season 8 of Game of Thrones differently if it had come out during the quarantine? Like, would we appreciate it more? And, like, what the ratings would be insane.
I honestly think people would be more mad because I think there would be more time during the week between episodes to fixate it without sports. You would have everyone, that's all they would be thinking about.
That's true.
Because if you go on Twitter during Game of Thrones, it felt like a sporting event with the way people were tweeting about it.
Yeah. It's like it really is. It's like overreact. Like, you can't let anything mellow and figure it out. That's actually why I think Better Call Saul is so good, because nobody's like watching it live like the way they were with Breaking Bad. And that too is like the thing with Breaking Bad, is that people were tweeting about it at the time live and like nobody complained about it. You know what I mean? Like, everybody was all in on it. That's the true testament of a show, is nobody's being and moaning about a show live on Twitter while it's happening.
Yeah, because once a show like that, those two shows get so popular and everyone is watching it, not just like the huge TV heads.
Yeah.
You're going to get criticism for so many things.
Like, my parents went back and they watched Game of Thrones for the first time during quarantine. And then I was like, what did you guys think about that final season? They're like, it was awesome. What are you talking about?
I actually think Game of Thrones 15 years from now, when someone's just on HBO and like, oh, people used to like this show, and they pick up and watch it and they're not doing the theories every single week on Reddit and all that, I think they'll be like, oh, the final season was, then it was good. But like, why did everyone get so mad? I actually, a couple nights ago, sorry, Devo, rewatched the second
Devo
last...
What Devo didn't know is that we have like a separate Slack thread where
we have our separate rundown.
No, yeah, it's like, here are the things we're going to do to derail the podcast on a daily basis.
I actually went back and watched the second to last episode, the one, spoiler alert, where Danny kind of goes mad. And there was a huge backlash at after that episode. And I just watched it and I was just like, why did people get so mad again? And I don't want to have to relive that, because we definitely did it on this podcast. But
yeah,
I think it'll age better than immediate reactions.
All right. So if you were picking one NFL player who would be a dragon, you would pick Patrick Mahomes.
If you want evergreen pods, go back to last like May 15th and just download that one. It still applies if you're rewatching Game of Thrones now. Pick 6 can serve as your rewatch pod.
I need to go back and like listen to some of those older pods to see if, like, just, I need to see what we sounded like. Cause I mean, like,
I mean, I was on Apple headphones at that point.
I don't mean like even the technical, like what was the flow like? Cause I do think it changes year to year. I got a note from, a podcast listener. I'm not going to say his name because he asked me this question, but he's like, dude, been loving the looseness of the podcast the last few weeks. Edibles, microdosing, well done. I was like, it's none of those. It's all natural, like my hair. But I think the quarantine has definitely had like a, effect to it. Yeah, like not, like Devo's not afraid to just turn his mic on and burn a coworker to the ground. He just doesn't care about it.
Well, at this point, a year ago, Devo wasn't.
Yeah, that was, you know, Game of Thrones was pre-Devo.
What?
Yeah, because we had one Game of Thrones recap that was a mess because we were just yelling at each other, me and you, as like Ryan. And then I started to come up with the Game of Thrones only rundown so we would stop yelling at each other.
Wait, Devo, you...
I was not privy to that. I joined officially August, so it was late, right before the season.
Is that right? I feel like you've been doing this podcast for 4 years.
Trust me, it feels like
it. It feels like 12. Man, we are special. By the way, shout out to New Anthem Brewery. I'm drinking a Neon God, Citra Mosaic Double Dry Hopped IPA. It is friggin' unbelievable. Maybe the best beer I've had this entire year.
You know what I've been getting into?
What's that?
Diva's gonna kill us, but I'm gonna get into hard kombucha. It's actually pretty good.
Let's go. I'm okay with that since you brought that up.
Kombucha? We tried this like black cherry one that was like 7.5%.
Wow.
Yeah, it was really good from Whole Foods.
I've been drinking a lot of bourbon in quarantine.
Yeah, I just killed a giant Four Roses. I gotta get a new one on Friday.
Oh, you know what I got over here? I got a single. Oh, what is it?
Debo, you like hard kombucha, right?
Yeah, I think
you were doing it on a podcast once.
I was drinking it after like a Thursday night football game where we were podcasting. You asked what that was, and I feel like it wasn't met super well at the time, but I'm glad we've grown during quarantine.
Small batch select Four Roses, and we found my...
Talking to the mic, Will.
My neighbor and I found this website that delivers Buff Trace.
Ooh.
For $28 a fifth.
It's
cheaper than the store, including the delivery fee.
I think it's like 28 here.
You cannot find it here. You cannot.
Oh, really? I know. You like held it up like a treasure. And I was like, they have them at Trader Joe's.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. You can't get this anywhere here.
Huh. Interesting. Yeah. I've never had the small batch Four Roses. I just buy the cheap one.
Yeah. Four Roses is very good. Underrated. Debo, any other thoughts on
speaking of the Chiefs,
yeah, if the Chiefs were a bourbon, they would be Four Roses.
I think that's probably fair. Chiefs over under 11.5 wins.
Over, and that's obviously predictable.
By the way, the over is minus 140, which is crazy.
I mean, I wouldn't put my own money on this. It's more just if you had to pick if they're going to win more than 11.5 or less than 11.5, I'm not betting against Mahomes and Reed. I said this on the HQ show. I really think in small sample size, obviously, they're the new Brady Belichick. Brady Belichick did it for 20 years. Mahomes and Reed have only been around for 2 years, so we'll see how that ages. But Mahomes' record, including the playoffs, is 28-8. That's good enough for winning percentage of 77.8. Tom Brady's career winning percentage with Bill Belichick is 76.9. So Mahomes and Reed, the last 2 years, including the playoffs, have been roughly the same percentage as Brady and Belichick, and a little bit better. And as much as we know about their offense, we don't need to rehash that because they're returning pretty much everyone. Added a running back in the draft, which was the definition of a luxury pick, which a team like them can afford to do. That defense was really coming on in the second half of the year. And that's 2 years ago, they cost them a spot in Super Bowl with ranking 26th in DVOA. They went all the way up to 14th. And if they had played the way they had played in the second half of that year, I think they would have been a top 10. And they managed to win 12 games. They managed to hit that over at 12 games with Mahomes missing pretty much three full games. And they went 2-1 without him with Matt Moore. And I think that's, so if Mahomes is healthy, I think they could win 14 games, maybe 15. And I know, you know, that's me saying it, the biggest Chiefs homer on this podcast. But I think even if he gets hurt for a game or two, gets concussed, let's say that happens, I think they can still hit the over because Andy Reid has proven he can win with backup quarterbacks.
Yeah. I mean, look, I actually think it'll be interesting to see what happens with Jordan Te'amu, friend of the podcast. He was on the podcast this offseason. He's on that depth chart now, right? Isn't he? Yeah. Behind, Chad Henne. I think he could actually end up winning the backup job and be an interesting, fill in for Mahomes. I mean, Andy Reid trades him for a first round pick. I had no problem predicting the over on the Chiefs, at 11.5. Andy Reid has won 3 of his 6 seasons in Kansas City. I believe he's won 12 games. He's never won 13 games in Kansas City. They are at Baltimore. And what was the other game that I had earmarked that I was concerned about before I lost my place on the Chiefs schedule? They are at Baltimore and they are at Tampa Bay in week 12, which I think is good. That's a tough game. You know, by the way, that game's on CBS. Lovely. Tampa Bay, Kansas City. Hello, Nance. I wonder if we'll send Jim Nance and Tony Romo to that game. Kansas City can go win that game. I just think I don't mind the over 11.5 as much. I would not take the over at 12 because I think there is a perfectly reasonable chance that they go 11-5. Like 11-5 is not a bad season.
It's good. They could get a top 2 seed with an 11-5, right?
They get the 1 seed with 11-5 for all we know with the Patriots, you know, being where they are. So because of that. And they're at New Orleans. Like that's, I think at Baltimore, at Tampa Bay, at New Orleans is probably three losses.
I don't, I mean,
not guaranteed, but like they're not going to be favored in those three games.
They're not going to be 3-0, but I think I would predict 2-1. I mean, a year ago,
I think one and two. Come on, man. The Saints, the Brady and the Bucks and the Ravens.
Yeah, but we're talking about, in my opinion, the best team in football.
I think there's a chance that they lose at Buffalo.
Ugh, I don't see that happening at all.
There's a good team. I mean, look, they're going to lose. They're not going 16-0.
I understand. I think they're winning 12 games or 13 games.
I know. All I'm saying is that at Buffalo, at Tampa Bay, at New Orleans, and at Baltimore, those are four really tough road games. And if you don't win one of those, I think it is very unlikely that you win 12 games.
And a lot of this does come down to the division. And on paper, I think we think all three of those other teams have gotten better. But they have a lot of ground to make up to be, you know, they can be better and still be significantly worse than the Chiefs. And if they are a lot better, then yes, then I have a hard time believing they're going to win 12 games because they swept, I believe, the division last year, went 5-1 a year ago. So with Mahomes, they're 11-1 against the division. But if that division improves, yes, it'll be hard. But I think for as much improvements as the Broncos have made, they're asking a lot of rookies coming in to make an impact. And it's a different beast when you're going up against Mahomes and Kansas City. And same with the Chargers. They have a big question mark at quarterback.
Well, let me just say this. I think that the Chiefs will probably win 12 games or more. I would not bet the over. I would not bet the under. If you put a gun to my head and said you got to bet one of these, I would bet the under because it is just such a high number and there's a huge, there's just not a lot of room for error. Like if Mahomes gets hurt and they don't win those games, you know, and like, or maybe the rest of the division stinks and it's clinched in week 15 and they sit their guys for 2 weeks, you know, like who, I mean, yeah. I don't, you know, like
a lot has to go right and only a couple things have to go wrong for a team not to win 12 exactly. games.
So like I would avoid betting the over 11.5 isn't crazy, but I would avoid betting. All right. Let's move on to the Chargers. We have the second highest. Again, this goes back to the division. Chargers second highest win total in the division, 7.5.
Am I crazy for liking the over? And I said this on the ACQ show too. I think you can make a reasonable argument for the over and you can make a very reasonable argument for the under. I think you said on the HQ show you wouldn't be surprised if they're in contention for the top pick. I said that at some point this offseason too, that we're going to have a conversation a year from now is if they should draft another quarterback, even though they took Herbert this past year. But I didn't love their draft because I don't like Herbert as a quarterback. I think we're in agreement there. But I loved their period of free agency. I thought signing Brian Bulaga, if that's a loss that we're not talking about enough with the Green Bay Packers not being able to replace him. When healthy, he's one of the top three, maybe best pass blocking right tackles. Flipping Russell Okung into Trey Turner, I thought was tremendous value. Getting an off injured guy in the final year of his contract and getting a young Pro Bowl guard. Re-signing Austin Eckler, a much better fit for the offense of Melvin Gordon. We were so frustrated a year ago when Melvin Gordon came back and then Austin Eckler's touches went down. It just made no sense whatsoever. You franchise tag Hunter Henry. That's a good 1 year deal. Linval Joseph, who's been perennially underappreciated because he played on a stacked Vikings defense. I thought, you know, adding him to already front four that is Bosa has Ingram is tremendous. And then Chris Harris is one of the best corners of the past decade. I don't see how this defense isn't a top 10 defense. I think they're one of the five best defenses. I didn't even like the Kenneth Murray trade whatsoever because they gave up too much. But if you're not, we're not looking at, you know, the next 5 years, we're looking at this upcoming season. He fills a huge void in the middle of their defense. So I think they have enough defensively to win with Tyrod Taylor, who did go 22-20 in Buffalo, won't turn the ball over, has an interception rate of 1.5 in his career, has familiarity with Anthony Lynn. And I'm pretty much buying the defense and I'm buying that run heavy approach. I won't be mad if you say I'm silly and think this is a 5-win team because I think a lot could go wrong for them. But I don't hate what they did this offseason.
I think that this roster is incredibly talented. My issue is that, if you took Russell Wilson, because they want to be the Seahawks. They want to be the Seahawks, right? If you took Russell Wilson, you put him on this roster, they're probably, they're not far behind the Chiefs in terms of, favored for the division, right?
They're not favored. I think the Chiefs would still be above them.
Of course. But I'm saying, it's not like 12-1 or 7-1. I mean, they're like,
No. The frustrating thing about this team is they are so good and they have so many impending free agents that this should be their all in year. And they're settling for Tyrod Taylor, who I like as a startable quarterback. But if they had won the Tom Brady sweepstakes, I mean, this would be really juicy division.
Exactly. Like, if Brady's on this team is like a top five favorite to win the Super Bowl. I think part of my concern is that, like the Seahawks, they seem intent on running the football a ton. Well, you know, they added Joshua Kelly, I guess, in the fourth round. They have Justin Jackson, who I like, but is still, you know, seventh rounder from 2018. They haven't shown a willingness to lean on. And they have Austin Eckler, who I love. Like, I'm all aboard the Austin Eckler bandwagon, but is Austin Eckler going to be Austin Eckler in a Phillip Rivers offense is different than Austin Eckler as a workhorse in a Tyrod Taylor offense. Like, those are not the same thing. So I question whether that'll work out. I still have lingering issues about what their training staff will do in terms of keeping guys healthy. I don't know that the offensive line is great. And there's nothing you can say. The defense is just awesome. How is this not a top five defense? You had Kenneth Murray, the one position they really had a problem with. If everybody's healthy, this is it's a top five defense. Like, just end of story. I just think that the approach that they're taking is very anti-modern, and that concerns me. So I would go under. I wouldn't be surprised if they won 10 games. I wouldn't be surprised if they won 2 games.
Yeah, and that's exactly what I'm saying. I think you can make a very reasonable case that they are the second best team in the division, and you can make a reasonable case that they're, again, we're going to be having a conversation. And if things go south, remember this, if things start off bad, they're going to put in the rookie quarterback, and they're punting on the year, and they're saying, we're just going to see what we have in Herbert moving forward. And then in that case, they're not getting the 8 wins.
I mean, let's walk through a scenario here, Sean, where they go to Cincinnati in week 1, and Joe Burrow's great, and Cincinnati pulls the upset, which I don't think is crazy at all, in Cincy. Then they get blasted by the Chiefs in week 2. Then, like, Carolina comes in and sneaks one on them in week 3, or maybe they win, whatever you want to do. And then they lose back-to-back games at Tampa, at New Orleans, and all of a sudden they're 1-4 or 0-5. It's Justin Herbert's playing against the Jets in week 6.
It's funny because you never want to say a season comes down to one game or week 1, but it's almost like if they lose in week 1, that would be enough to swing me to the under. And that's really the problem with saying taking the Chargers over is – their margin for winning, as you just outlined, is so small, and their margin to getting to 8 or 9 wins is so small. And with all these AFC West teams, you have to add the fact that they do have to play the Chiefs twice. And I know the Chiefs aren't, you know, you can beat the Chiefs. It's happened before.
I don't think you're beating the Chiefs with Tyrod Taylor.
But you look, yeah, I think with all these teams, maybe the exception of in Denver would be the one game where I think the Chiefs could lose that. You have to mark these down when you're going win-loss as 2 losses for the Chargers against the Chiefs.
Absolutely. And they're also at Miami in week 7, at Buffalo late November. I mean, you know, they have to play New England in week 13 at home, which I get it. New England's not Tom Brady Patriots, but like you're still playing the Patriots and Bill Belichick. Like, you want to play small ball with Bill Belichick?
I mean, okay. And Bill Belichick has played against Tyrod Taylor plenty when he's in Buffalo. He understands how to game plan for him.
Absolutely. And then you're hoping the Chiefs are sitting starters in week 17, so you get the 8 wins. All right. Debo, are we exactly on the time that you plotted out for this podcast?
Oh, this is just like I planned.
wait, question. Breach and Wilson have recorded alone this week, right?
Yes.
Who is the worst combo in terms of going off on tangents?
This one right here.
Okay.
Well, it's also a
little... Ryan, I know Ryan's a no-nonsense. He just wants to...
Well, it's also different. We recorded with those two guys before the HQ show at like 3 p.m. And so we had, and in fact, one of them we were like, oh yeah, the A-block's canceled. And they're like, no, A-block's back on. So we had to sprint to get it done, and we didn't want to record after. In this case, you know, like, we fired up at 5:15 after the show, cracked a beer. You know, it's a different vibe. Sure, it's hell for Debo, but what are you going to do?
Las Vegas. He's gonna have to cut out a lot of kombucha and Game of Thrones stuff.
Some Sunday night vibes right here.
I know. I like it. It is. You're like, oh yeah, we got tons of time. We got an hour to fill. And all of a sudden it's like 38 minutes in. Like, you haven't hit your break yet. The Las Vegas Raiders over under 7.5 wins. So the final 3 teams, all 7.5 wins. The Raiders is even money over or under. The Raiders are actually the second favorite to win the division at plus 850, 15-1 to win the AFC, and 30-1 to win the Super Bowl. What do you think about the Raiders over under, Sean?
I think this is my favorite bet of the 4 teams, and I think it's under. And I think their number is greatly inflated. It should not be at 7.5. And the reason it's at 7.5 is because they won 7 games a year ago, which was, I think, impressed a lot of us. I don't think any of us. I remember when we were doing that. Remember that bold predictions article where we all took a turn drafting? It was hell to put together. And I think we had multiple Raiders, like, last team to get a win, or like maybe they only win 1 game all season. And they end up winning 7 games, which is great. It shows they're taking strides under John Gruden. But then you look at how they won those 7 games, and there's a lot of red flags that scream regression is coming for them. They got outscored by 106 points. Only 5 teams had worse point differentials than the Oakland Raiders. They went 7-3 in 1-score games, which means every single game that they won came by 8 points or less. And I think out of all those, there was only 1 8-point game, which was in week 1 against the Broncos, if I recall correctly. So they didn't win a single game by a comfortable margin. That, as we were just talking about with the Chargers, it puts your margin for error so slim. And I actually like what they did this offseason. I thought getting Nick Witkowski, who I obviously watched a lot in Chicago, and Corey Littleton, I thought those were 2 good signings to beef up their linebacker core. Had 2 first round picks. It comes down to the quarterbacks, and I don't want to sound like a broken record because we always bash Derek Carr on this podcast, but I don't think they can win 8 games in a division with the Chiefs, when the Broncos and Chargers both had pretty good off seasons with Derek Carr and Marcus Mariota. And I think we're probably going to see both of them at some point, but I don't think it's ever a good sign for a team if you're projecting a quarterback split, because that means both of them aren't going to be that good. So I will take the under, and it's my favorite of the AFC West bets.
They're a 5.3 win by projected win loss. I mean, it's pretty simple. They should not have done what they did. I struggle with the Raiders because I know that, I have this like not real beef with the Carr brothers. Like, they all blocked me. And so like, we pump it up. It's not like, I don't think I would like walk in a room and Derek Carr. I'd be like, maybe if I was like, I'm Will Brinson, he'd be like, oh, but I don't think he'd be like, I don't think he sits around and is like, I hate the Prince, you know, like, I don't think the Carr family's worried about me. They're overly sensitive. But Raiders fans are bothered by this podcast because they don't hear us. They hear us being negative about the Raiders a lot. And, I think I was wrong about John Gruden coming back to coach. I think John Gruden is still a really good coach.
I agree with that.
Offensively, he knows what he's doing. Paul Gunther's a good defensive coordinator. He hasn't been given everything he needs to do. They took over a team that was in quasi rebuild and they kicked all the good pieces to the curb except Derek Carr. I think Mike Mayock is doing a good job with the draft. He hasn't nailed every pick he's had, but I mean, my goodness, Max Crosby, a home run, you know,
Renfro was like in the 5th round or 6th.
Yeah.
Round.
Yeah. Like if his early picks develop, they're going to be really good. I just think that the problem with going 7-9 for the Raiders last year is that now the expectation, you know, a year after going 4-12 is you exponential growth and that you go like 9-7 or 10-6. And I just don't think that's on the table. Even 8-8 feels like a stretch considering like they were really lucky to beat the Bears in London. They were really lucky to beat the Colts in week 4. They probably shouldn't have beat the Broncos in week 1. That really destroyed my entire season. They shouldn't have beat the Chargers in week 10. You know, they shouldn't have beat the Bengals in week 11. There's just so many close games that they came away as winners. I just have a hard time believing that they put it all together this year. And I like the addition of Henry Ruggs. I think he's going to be a stud. I don't know how he fits with Derek Carr. I think that is a viable concern that he is a deep threat. Now you can get him, you know, short stuff near the line of scrimmage. You can rip off big runs after the catch. I just don't think this team is here yet. And I think we have fairly anecdotal data that when you move a city and you change a city, especially in a COVID-19 offseason, that it's going to create some havoc with how you handle things. And they're going to Vegas. Like, really? Like, again, as I said on the HQ show, if I move to Vegas in August, I'm going to be terrible at my job for the next 4 months because I'm in Vegas.
I think something else to consider is that for as much crap as we give Derek Carr, statistically, he was actually pretty good. Yeah. Even the advanced metrics like him. But the problem is that I don't know if
he can play 70% of his passes, 4,000 passing yards, 21 touchdowns, 8 picks. I mean, like,
right. But even with Derek Carr as one of the best versions of himself, they barely won seven games. And so the question becomes, do you think Derek, that was like the beginning of his ascent this late in his career? Or was that just like one of his outlier? He had a good season. Then he's going to drop off to career norms, because I lean the latter. I don't know. Like, I think he could maybe have a similar type of season as he had a year ago, but the problem is he had that season and they still weren't very good. As you said, expected win total around five. So I don't think he's going to get that much better than he was a year ago, in part because he was already pretty good by his standards.
Let's see, where is the quote? I know this podcast is going on for hours and hours, Devo, and I know you don't like it, but you know, Sean and I are having fun chatting. So, I was trying to find the quotes from Derek Carr to Vic Taffer of The Athletic. It's a really interesting interview, I think, because, you know, he's asked about like Marcus Mariota. And he's like, you know, he's like, I knew, like, you know, I talked to Gruden and those guys, and he's like, and now, you know, he's just here to help. And obviously he's here to compete. We all know that this is football. That's everybody's job. Like, Derek Carr is like trying to dispel the idea that Marcus Mariota is coming in to be the starter. They talked about, Tom Brady coming in, and he, you know, he sort of was like, well, you know, if like you lose your job to Tom Brady, what are you going to do? And I tend to agree. The one thing that was interesting was, he's like, let's kick the tires on this no PC car. Does it bother you that you have gotten a captain checkdown label these last 3 years? And Derek Carr says, yeah, man, what the heck? We watched some cutups today and we're throwing some bombs down the field. We're completing them at a high clip. Just because we don't throw 10 of them a game and only complete three of them, second and 10 is a lot different than second and three in the NFL. You know, I can tell you this, we have philosophies that we live by and that we're going to continue to live by. But at the same time, there's also times where I can see that I have Darren Waller on this 10-yard out. I could have thrown the go route, but we complete the 10-yard out and he got 16. Is it really worth risking the go route rather than the 16-yard gain and people freak out? I don't feel like that's what happens. Am I crazy? I don't feel like he's like ripping like 10-yard outs on the like 10-yard out route. I don't feel like that happens.
That's a lot of who's the running back I'm blanking on? DeAndre Washington, a lot of him like coming out of the backfield.
I feel like a lot, like these, like the average depth of target is not 10 yards, you know, like there's a lot of yak for these guys, and maybe that's Gruden's system. I don't know. I just, for me, it's like, it's a big season for him, and we'll see how he does. And I hope that he does well, but I will take the Raiders under. Finally, the Denver Broncos over under 7.5 wins, over -120, under +110. I think we're probably on the same page here. I was a year early on the Broncos, unfortunately.
Yeah, and I don't feel good about taking the over, but I will. Because there's, I love their offseason. I love their draft. I think a lot of us probably gave them A's or A minuses, but you still are counting on a lot of young players to develop it. It's easy to look at a draft and say, oh, they crushed it. The fact of the matter is we have no idea how these guys are going to look, especially in year one, especially in this kind of environment in this offseason. But the reason I'm taking the over is I do like what I saw from Drew Lock in a very small sample size, and he is still an unknown. And again, that's one reason why I don't feel great about taking the over. But he went 4-1 as a starter on a team that was 3-8 without him. He definitely elevated the team around him. Again, big question mark, not saying he's going to break out in a big way. The speed that they added, this was the draft that we thought the Packers should have had, right? And, you know, they had a star wide receiver in Cortland Sutton, like the Packers have in Devontae Adams. And what they did is they went out and they added even more deep threats and even more speedy guys. Cortland Sutton is now the slowest wide receiver on this team, and he's one of the best deep threats in all of football, somewhere around 16 yards per catch. But the main reason why I like the over is because I think the defense is going to be really good. Most of that is Vic Fangio being there, but they have two great edge rushers in Chubb and Von Miller. Getting rid of Chris Harris is not going to help, but I do think they rebounded in a decent way by getting AJ Bouye, where I believe for a fifth round pick, which was a really good deal given how productive he's been, and right, giving up a fifth round pick. And I always bring this up, and it's because I'm a Bears homer, but the Bryce Callahan signing a year ago I thought was really good, and Bryce Callahan just wasn't healthy over the course of the entire season. If he is healthy and you get AJ Bouye playing at his peak, I think that secondary could be one of the best in football with that pass rush as well. So, I think they need a couple breaks to go their way. They need the rookies to pan out, and they need Drew Lock to pan out, but I would rather have the over than the under. And I think them or the Chargers are probably the second best team in the division. And they are one of the only teams that I think can beat the Chiefs at home simply because of their home field advantage.
I agree with what you just said, and I think that if you look at Denver, they were a, you know, they basically equaled out to their Pythagorean theorem in terms of wins. But yeah, they lost. They beat up the Texans. I'm trying to think where they're.
That Bears game was a crazy loss.
No, but I'm saying like their point differential. They went to Buffalo and lost 20-3 in a. I think that was that a snow game? The Chiefs game was a snow game. They lost 20. I would say they like if you look at their point differential, it's like largely accumulated in three games. One at Buffalo where they lost by 17 points, at Kansas City where they lost by 20 points, and then at home against Kansas City where they lost by 24 points. Like that skewed their point differential where it makes it look like they should have been a 7-win team. But the Bears in week two, the Raiders they could have beaten week one, the Bears in week two, the Jaguars in week four, you know, they had a ton of close games that they lost. The Colts in week eight was a crazy one too, where it's like, you know, kicks and all that go down and they win. So to me, it basically comes down to Drew Lock. If Drew Lock takes a step forward and becomes like something in the top 15 to 20 range in terms of quarterbacks and is an average to above average quarterback in his second year, this is an 8 or 9 or 10 win team. And they're getting above 500. They have a ton of talent on both sides of the ball. John Elway gets bashed a lot, has done a good job rebuilding this roster. The wide receiver, the pass catchers, I mean, Cortland Sutton, Jerry Jeudy, KJ Hamler, and Noah Fant. I mean, that's awesome. Yeah, it's young, but it's awesome.
And we didn't like the Melvin Gordon signing just from a financial long-term standpoint, but I do think he makes the offense better. You know, if you're just going to look at next year in a vacuum and not worry about the details of the financials, I do think he will help Drew Lock because I think it wouldn't surprise me, even though they have all this speed, if this is a really run heavy team that then banks on play action to get Drew Lock some easy reads and then to take deep shots downfield.
Yeah, I'm with you. I think it's going to be a good team. Odds wise, as we mentioned, the sort of skewed a little bit, right? The Chiefs are minus 450 to win the division. That's a pretty, I mean, if you want to tie up $450 to win 100, you know, go for it. You're probably getting your money back. Like you're probably going to win the 100 bucks, but you got to, you know, there are better ways to deposit your money. The Raiders plus 8.5 to 1 to win the division. Chargers 10-1, Broncos 10-1. I don't see any value with either. Like I need, if you gave me 25-1 of the Broncos, I'd consider it. Or like 25-1 of the Chargers, I might consider it. But 10-1 is not nearly enough, and the Chiefs are minus 450. The Raiders 15-1 to win the AFC. Chiefs 2-1. Chargers 12-1. Broncos 25-1 to win the AFC. And then Broncos 50-1 to win the Super Bowl. Raiders 30. Chargers 25. And Chiefs 4-1. I know you like the Chiefs 4-1 to win the Super Bowl, but like
I don't like any of these. And I don't like any of the AFC West bets because you're banking on the Chiefs having a disaster year in terms of injury. Like that's probably Mahomes missing the full season if you're banking on another team winning the division. I don't like the AFC bets for any of the other three teams because it's not just the Chiefs. It's also the Ravens you got to get past. And I think, the Colts are going
to, but if you're going to bet on the, like taking the Chiefs at 2-1 to win the AFC is just stupid because you can just bet on the Chiefs if they play the Ravens in the AFC championship game. Just bet the money line. I mean, like worst case scenario, it's in Kansas City and they're like minus 130. I mean, 2-1 is just not nearly enough for the Chiefs to win the division.
And I don't, you look at the Super Bowl odds, 25-1. I just don't see any path the Chargers are winning a Super Bowl. Like I can see them making the playoffs. I can make an argument for that. They're not winning how many playoff games on the road that's going to be required.
A team with 7.5 wins, a win total of 7.5 should not be 25-1 to win the Super Bowl.
Yeah.
Like Vegas is saying we think they're a 500 team. And they're 25-1.
I don't like the Broncos at 50-1, but that is the only Super Bowl like odds that I could talk myself into as a good long shot because Drew Lock is such an unknown that if he does take that huge leap with that defense, then you can talk yourself. And if they were to somehow get a home playoff game or home playoff games, plural, that's a really hard place to go into January. Like Tom Brady struggled doing that against Von Miller and those defenses, but I can't talk myself into most teams in the AFC with the Chiefs and the Ravens there. And you're just not going to get good enough odds on the Chiefs or the Ravens.
All right. I agree with you. We're sort of in lockstep on this one. That's the AFC West, AFC West podcast. It's a long one, but you got a Friday full of time to listen to it. And we will be back on Monday. The mailbag. If you want to leave mailbag questions, go to Apple Podcasts and drop them in there. Thanks as always for listening. Sean, thanks buddy. Talk soon.
It's the UEFA Champions League on Paramount Plus. Europe's top club soccer tournament. Champions versus champions. The best teams facing off in the knockout rounds.
Magnificent!
And it all takes place
while you're filling out financial reports at work. In the middle of your day, in the middle of your week. So use that second screen. Call in sick. Do whatever you gotta do to tune in Tuesdays and Wednesdays. Nobody watches the UEFA Champions League like us. Stream every match live exclusively on Paramount Plus.